Good morning, and welcome to the Wednesday, October 8th edition of Southern Champaign County Today. My name is Lori Talkington for the Illinois Radio Reader, and today's date is Thursday, October 9th, 2025. Top of the front page is a great review of Countryside United Methodist Church's annual harvest breakfasts, that's plural, thanking our local farmers. This article by Ann Roten. The Countryside United Methodist Church, located at 1807 County Road 1000 North, Urbana, between Sydney and Philo on the Sydney Slab, are hosting their annual harvest breakfasts from 6 to 8 a.m. on October 8th, the 15th, and the 22nd. The first one occurred on October 1st. Sounds of the local crop harvests are in the air and visible all around us. Members of the Countryside United Methodist Church got up early, like the farmers do, during the harvest season, and held their first harvest breakfast of the month on Wednesday, October 1st, from 6 to 8 a.m. Anne, our correspondent, headed out to the church to see what was on the menu, to take in all the camaraderie and fun of it all, and snap some photos of the event. Pastor Jeff Stahl of the Countryside United Methodist Church was in attendance to greet folks when they first got there, and head organizer of the Harvest Breakfasts, Karen Chumbly, took the time to give me, our correspondent, a little history about the event, during which she provided that Kelly Little had started the Harvest Breakfast series 10-plus years ago, and that has continued to grow into a popular harvest season event at the church. The menu consists of biscuits and sausage gravy, cinnamon rolls, coffee, and juice, and the general public, as well as our farmers, are invited. There is no cost, but donations are accepted, with a portion of them benefiting the Unity East and West elementary schools. If you missed the first breakfast, no worries. You can still attend breakfast at the church on Wednesday, October 15th, and on Wednesday, October 22nd, again from 6 to 8 a.m. Those on the run can call ahead to the church for to-go boxes that they can pick up on their way to the fields. The number to call to plan ahead for a to-go box is 217-688-2422. Our correspondent hopes that readers will make the call and come out and enjoy the farmers' harvest breakfasts. Moving right on now to our community news and notes, we'll start with the Sydney Scoop, brought to us by Ann Roten. The Village of Sydney Board of Trustees regular meeting should have taken place on Monday, October 6th. There will be a report on it in next week's paper. The next Mid-Central Women's Christian Temperance Union meeting will take place on Saturday, October 19th at 11:30 a.m. at Monocle's Pizza in Villa Grove. Please feel free to attend, and new members are always welcome. You can call Vice President Marjorie Miller for more information. Her number is 217-202-4397. The Sydney American Legion Post 433 will hold their next monthly meeting at the post home at 221 South David Street in downtown Sydney on Monday, October 20th at 6 p.m. New members are always welcome. All meetings are held at the post home. The seasonal rural Sydney business, Negan Gard Pumpkin Patch, opened for the season on Saturday, September 27th, and continues to be open every day, 7 days a week, from 9 a.m. until dark through Halloween on October 31st. They have lots to choose from for your fall decorating and Halloween fun, from a large assortment of pumpkins, big and small, as well as gourds, Indian corn, squash, bales of straw, and corn shuck bundles. Payment for purchases is in cash or check only. Neegangard Pumpkin Patch is located at 1883 County Road 700 North in Sydney Township between Sydney and Philo. You can call Mitch Neegangard for more information. His number is 217-722-7866. The Sydney Improvement Group is getting ready for their Sydney Hometown Christmas event and have already published vendor information for the Shop at Home part of the event, which is taking place on Saturday, December 6th, from 9 a.m. to 2 in the afternoon at the Sydney Community Building. The community building will be open on Friday, December 5th from 5 to 7 p.m. and on Saturday, December 6th at 7:30 a.m. for setup, and the Shop at Home will open for customers at 9 a.m. at the Sydney Community Building. Vendors should bring tables, but chairs will be provided. Vendors should also bring their own extension cords and label them if power is needed. Booth fees are $15 each, and checks should be made payable to the Sydney Improvement Group, and they should be mailed with your vendor form to Donna Hooker, P.O. Box 354 in Sydney. She can also take Zelle for the booth fees. Vendor forms can be obtained from the Sydney Improvement Group Facebook page, or once again you can call or text Donna, and her phone number is 217-621-4929. The Sydney Improvement Group has also posted a question: is anyone interested in participating in a Christmas parade this year? A tentative date is the 6th of December 2025. If there is interest, please visit our Facebook page. Interest in the parade waned last year. Should we do it again this year? You can respond by finding her post, Donna Hooker's post, for the Sydney Improvement Group on Facebook, and call her with your opinion at 217-621-4929. Thanks to Ann Roten for all the news in the Sydney Scoop. Let's move on now to the Philo Library Weekly Newsletter. And they begin, "We had our first crawlers on Thursday, October 2nd, and we're looking forward to having a lot more before the month is up. If you're reading this wondering what in the heck we're talking about, you must have missed our most recent columns. I'm talking about the Illinois Heartland Library System's Library Crawl. Over 190 libraries are participating this year. This is a fun time to take a road trip, whether just a short one to some of the small-town libraries surrounding Champaign-Urbana, or a more distant trip to some of the larger libraries in other parts of Illinois. All you need is a passport from your hometown library, which will give you all the participating libraries and their addresses, hours of operation, and other pertinent information. If you're curious, stop in and ask whoever is at the desk about what's the big deal, and they'll be happy to tell you. If you do make some visits to other libraries this October, we at the Philo Library would like to hear about your library crawl, especially if there was something that made one of the libraries memorable to you, whether it is their collections, their displays, or something about their preparations for the library crawl, or just a general good feeling or something surprising that you found when you walked in to look at a new library. We would appreciate any comments or observations that you would like to make. So for now, from the Philo Library, thanks for reading." Let's move on now to the Philo, or excuse me, the Tolono Library's weekly news. They're sponsoring Kids Story Time on Thursdays from 10 to turn 30 every Thursday. Bring in your little ones for some reading fun and playtime. On Saturday, October 11th, the Tolono Library will have the Adult and Teen Nutrition Seminar. We will have two sessions, one from 11 to 11:45 in the morning, and another from noon to 12:45 in the afternoon. Please check out our event page on our Tolono Library website for more details. On Monday, October 13th, and Tuesday, October 14th, we have our study stations from 3:30 to 5 in the afternoon. Monday is K through 12 English Language Arts, and Tuesday is K through 12 Science. On Wednesday, October 15th, we'll have the CU Fab Lab from 3:30 to 5 in the afternoon. October is also the Library Crawl Month. Grab your library passport at the Tolono Library and head out for some fun. We'll have a raffle for those getting at least 5 stamps from 5 other libraries. The Tolono Library still has lots planned for the month of October, so be sure to check out our Facebook and Instagram pages, as well as our own Tolono Library website for all the details. And in news from Sadorus, the Sadorus 4-H All-Stars are hosting a barbecue and bake sale on October 12th. So mark your calendars for next Sunday, that's October 12th. The Sadorus 4-H All-Stars will host Harvest Days, and they are expanding this year to the Mill Mine Elevator from 11 to 1:30 in the afternoon. So stop by the Mill Mine Elevator for a barbecue sandwich and baked goods offered by our 4-H families. Money raised through the barbecue and bake sale supports 4-H activities and community service projects. Please spread the word, and we hope to see lots of you there. All are welcome on Sunday, October 12th from 11 to 1:30 at the Mill Mine Elevator in Sadorus. And in weekly news from Parkland College, we learn that the college's popular music ensembles are continuing their fall concert season with orchestra, voice, and choir ensembles. Parkland College's music ensembles will continue the fall 2025 concert season with performances by the orchestra, voice, and choir ensembles. The Parkland College Orchestra and Centennial High School Chamber and Concert Orchestra will perform Autumn Orchestra Showcase on Tuesday, October 7th. The Parkland Orchestra, directed by Dr. Rodney Mueller, and the Centennial High School Orchestra, directed by Lily Sampson, performed a variety of selections. These include The Interlude Nightfall by Yukiko Nishimura, Aboriginal Rituals by Elliot Del Borgo, Overture by Nabucco by Giuseppe Verdi, and Swamp Thing by Richard Meyer. For more information on Parkland College's music ensemble performances, you can visit their website, which is simply parkland.edu, and look for the link to Music Ensembles. In more Parkland news, we learn that the college is partnering with the Advanced Vehicle Technology Education and Credentialing Coalition in a nonprofit automotive accreditation program. The acronym for the Advanced Vehicle Technology Program is AVTEC. This is a nonprofit organization focused on transforming workforce education and credentialing in the transportation sector. They've announced the launch of an accreditation program in partnership with 4 leading institutions, including Parkland College. The other institutions include Collin College in Texas, Umpqua Community College in Oregon, and Mass Bay Community College in Massachusetts. These four institutions, including Parkland, will be the first electric vehicle workshop in the nation to begin aligning their automotive programs to AvTech's skills-based certification and accreditation model. The pilot program represents a major step toward reshaping technician education by aligning programming to meaningful outcomes and the skills employers hire and promote for. According to the Parkland Applied Science Technologies Department Chair Jonathan Ross, we are honored to be at the forefront of this important national initiative from AvTech. Together, Parkland College will not only be better equipped to meet the needs of the advancing automotive industry, but also create new opportunities for our students, expand our capabilities, and prepare the workforce of the future. Each participating institution will begin embedding performance-based, industry-recognized skills assessments into their automotive curricula. These assessments will be tied to AvTech certifications, which validate real-world skills in all areas of automotive technology, with an emphasis on advanced technologies, including electric vehicle systems, advanced diagnostics, and advanced driver assistance systems. By integrating certification into existing programs, schools can give students an advantage in the job market and deliver on the promise of career-ready education. Our goal is to build elite programs that produce exceptional technicians, said David Macholtz, President and CEO of AvTech. Our accreditation model goes deeper than minimum standards and compliance. It's about building programs that result in meaningful outcomes for students and the local industry that these institutions serve. A key component of the AvTech accreditation process is the Automotive Instructors Institute, a professional development program designed to help educators build instructional capacity around emerging technologies and competency-based instruction. Faculty at pilot schools, including Parkland, will receive targeted training and support as they align program outcomes with AvTech standards and then prepare to assess students on nationally validated skill sets. The pilot program will inform the full rollout of AvTech's National Accreditation Framework, which is designed to evaluate programs based on learner achievement, industry engagement, and instructional quality, ensuring that graduates are equipped for high-demand roles in a rapidly changing transportation landscape. For more information about AvTech, the pilot institutions, or the accreditation process, you can visit their website, which is simply avtech.org, and the acronym AvTech is spelled A-V-T-E-C-C. So it's avtech.org, or you can email them at info@avtech.org. And next up, we have our weekly news from Rocket Nation, brought to us by Diane Ducey. And she begins, "It's Fire Prevention Week from now until October 11th, and my farmer friends are naturally taking note. In talking with relatives," she says, "about precautions being taken in East Central Illinois, one of the topics that came up is blowing out the combine. In other words, cleaning it out more frequently. In doing so, there's not as much residue that could catch on fire if conditions were to heat up with an equipment malfunction, even as if a bearing were to break on the machinery. It was stated that Premier Co-op has strategically placed water tanks in spots around their service area for quick access to water should some sparks ignite. It was noted on social media in the rural Philo area that on Sunday, October 5th, a few families sprang into action and hooked up a disc coming out to till an area where a small field fire was quickly contained as a result of farmers and firefighters working together to extinguish the flames. Philo Fire Chief Keith Schaefroth was asked about the scenario in the Philo field, and he replied, "The biggest thing I can say about the incident is that it was a community team effort that got it put out so quickly. The farmers came to help their neighbors without hesitation. Everyone in the county is fighting the same battle, dangerously dry and occasionally strong winds. It doesn't take much to ignite the dry grain. It could be something as simple as a hot bearing. Weather is a popular topic, and with very little rain at certain times of the growing season, our agriculture community is finding that they may lose money on some of their soybean crops because of a lack of moisture content, which is in the 8% range. For the soybeans, the corn is also coming in dry at about 12 to 13% moisture, which is another historically low figure. It has been an exceptional year for harvesting so far, with hardly any rain delays, and with the warm, dry conditions, it seems that the crops have matured extremely quickly, almost too quickly. My first cousin, this is Diane speaking, of course, whose name is Chris Hausman, who took time to chat in the combine as the auger driver was loading up alongside of him, stated that, "We've been blessed not to have real strong winds so far," as he explained the progress on his harvest in Pasotum. The rains that came through last week gave some of his acres an inch and a half of rain to really settle the dust down a bit. Being observant and checking up on the tractors and combines as yields are coming in, plus having a plan with water nearby on the gator, are all part of the process as grain is gathered from the fields this fall. Our thanks to Diane for this good rundown on fall harvest conditions this year. Today's paper includes extensive coverage of the situation in Chicago with the National Guardsmen and ICE. This article is on today's front page of the Southern Champaign County Today. Headline, President Trump is sending 300 National Guardsmen to Chicago. Their deployment comes as ICE ramps up arrests. After weeks of threatening to do so, President Donald Trump is taking command of 300 Illinois National Guard troops and sending them to Chicago over the objections of Governor J.B. Pritzker, the governor announced Saturday. He went on, "This morning, the Trump administration's Department of War gave me an ultimatum. Call up our troops, or they will," Pritzker said in a statement. "It is absolutely outrageous and un-American to demand a governor send military troops within our own borders and against our own will." The promised deployment comes as Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE, has ramped up activities in Chicago and its suburbs as part of a so-called Operation Midway Blitz, which has so far resulted in more than 800 arrests, according to the Department of Homeland Security. There have also been two shootings, including one Saturday on the city's southwest side. Although the Trump administration insists that ICE is targeting undocumented immigrants with criminal backgrounds, reports have mounted of agents arresting those with no history of illegal activity, detaining children along with their parents, and even handcuffing U.S. citizens. Immigrant and civil rights groups have alleged that ICE is arresting people without warrants in violation of a federal consent decree. The wave of raids and arrests has spurred large protests in recent weeks, especially outside of an ICE processing center in Broadview, which is a suburb 8 miles west of Chicago. The demonstrations have spurred clashes between immigration agents and activists, leading to the arrests of several protesters last weekend on charges of resisting and assaulting officers. Agents have sprayed chemical agents and fired non-lethal rounds into the crowds outside the facility. On Monday, Governor Pritzker announced that the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, was seeking 100 Illinois National Guard troops to protect ICE facilities and immigration agents in Illinois, warning that the Trump administration would use any confrontation resulting from its Chicago-area immigration crackdown as a pretext for a military deployment. On Saturday, the governor called the administration's National Guard activation a manufactured performance and not about protecting public safety. "I want to be clear," he said. "There is no need for military troops on the ground in the state of Illinois," as he pointed to the Illinois State Police's announcement this week that it had joined forces with Broadview Police and the Cook County Sheriff's Office to form a unified command to coordinate local law enforcement activity outside the ICE facility. One of the Illinois State Police's first acts in Broadview was designating demonstration areas, also known as free speech zones. Pritzker on Saturday said that the combined efforts of state and local and law enforcement protected people's ability to peacefully exercise their constitutional rights. The unified command reported the arrests of at least 5 protesters on Friday and 5 more on Saturday night as of about 8 p.m. The area was quiet on Saturday afternoon, with only about a dozen protesters gathered, at times outnumbered by members of the media. The governor noted in his statement that, "I will not call up our National Guard to further Trump's acts of aggression against our people." However, shortly before Pritzker's announcement about the National Guard deployment on Saturday, a U.S. Border Patrol agent shot a woman in an altercation between immigration agents and protesters on Chicago's southwest side. According to reporting from the Chicago Sun-Times, the woman was alleged to have been driving one of 10 cars that, quote, rammed and boxed in nearly 36 immigration agents in the city's Brighton Park neighborhood. Agents fired defensive shots when they saw the woman was allegedly, and this is in quotes, armed with a semi-automatic weapon, according to the paper. She was taken to a nearby hospital for treatment. The woman was one of 2 people charged by federal prosecutors in the Northern District of Illinois with using their vehicles to assault, impede, and interfere with the work of federal agents in Chicago. Trump and Pritzker have spent weeks trading barbs over the president's threats to deploy National Guard troops to Chicago, with the governor alleging that Trump's apparent backing off from the idea last month was a sign of dementia. The governor has already vowed legal action against the Trump administration if and when the president activates the National Guard. After the president sent 1,400 National Guard troops to Los Angeles this summer, the first time since the 1960s that the feds deployed the National Guard without a governor's consent. Well, that a federal judge last month then ruled that the move violated the Posse Comitatus Act, which limits the power of federal government to use military force for domestic matters. However, the ruling only applies to California. The National Guard's presence in L.A. has dwindled to about 250 now, but there are still a couple of thousand troops on assignment in Washington, D.C., where the federal government has more power over law enforcement. This coverage concludes our reading of today's edition of Southern Champaign County Today. My name is Lori Talkington for the Illinois Radio Reader, and I invite you to join us again next week.